and help your community. And that's what makes community so good. That's what makes East Texas so good. I often talk about, I won't try to sound like campaign stuff, but I often talk about a lot about liberty leading to prosperity, but prosperity giving rise always to generosity. So, you know, prosperity is not the end goal. It's not. We have a great country that has liberty. My goal for your U.S. Congressman in Washington, D.C. is to provide you as much liberty in your business and your lives as possible, because I know that your hard work and good decisions are going to lead to prosperity, but that's not why I'm doing it. So you can end up with a bunch of money in your bank account, because that stuff is just hay and stubble, isn't it? I mean, it is. It's just hay and stubble. What matters is the generosity. Liberty to prosperity to generosity. Not because some government tells you you have to be generous, but because it emanates from your heart. It emanates from an understanding that we are put on earth for an eternal purpose to make a difference in the lives of the people around us. In some way, whatever way that we're called to do that. And for some people, it's not me. I can tell you it's not me to do it this way, to help with my neighbor's fence or lumber issues. You don't want me out there doing that. I would have that fence as crooked as can be, but I can solve a lot of other issues that maybe somebody that doesn't have the same skill set can't do. We all have different issues. I can help my neighbor in a lot of ways. I can mow their lawn, which is what I started doing years and years ago. And as an older elementary school student and a younger junior high student, and I can even count rose bushes, which I did between my 7th and 8th grade year in middle school in that hot July sun. Learning how to work and just give back is something that's ingrained in us here in East Texas. I did grow up in the White House. I do have a picture to prove it, that I was a quarterback once at White House. I often tell folks that it was my 0-10 season that laid the groundwork for Patrick Mahomes' greatness. So, 21 years later, his season was great because of that 1992-93 0-10 team that I served on. That was that I was the captain for. But you know, one of the quotes that I learned at West Point. I typically walk around, but I'm gonna try not to walk around because I know we got the camera going. At West Point, I was there for 2 years, and I transferred on and decided to do a civilian track at Texas Tech. But I learned a great quote there that said, "On the fields of friendly strife are sown the seeds that on other fields, on other days, bear the fruits of victory." That was a quote by General Patton. And you know, when you think about that quote, you realize that it's true. Sports is, as a young person, really ingrained in me the ability to push through, to work through adversity, to learn how to be a good winner and a good loser. I play board games with my kids all the time. I have a 17, 16, 7, and 5-year-old. We had two. We waited 8 years. We had two more. Not recommend it. Not the way to go. Once you're out of the diaper stage, getting back into the diaper stage is a little bit more difficult. At age 48, I tell my little kids, and I told them even in my mid-40s, "Hey, look, I'll do anything you want to do, but it's got to be tabletop and up. It's got to be tabletop and up, because getting up and down off that floor gets a lot harder at 48. So I want you to know I appreciate the service you're giving. I see my role in Congress as a role of service as well. That's what it's about. It's not a right to be in that position. I don't have a right to that position. I didn't earn that right. It's a responsibility. It's a calling that I have, because I think that I feel like that God has allowed me to have the skill set to be able to get up there and mix it up and learn how to duke it out with folks in a way that still gets things done, stands firm for principles, but then also is actually getting policy through a very difficult legislative body. And if you didn't realize Congress is a difficult legislative body, you should have stuck with the C-SPAN the first week. So you would have realized it took us a week to make one decision. And it was a long week, but our founding fathers set up a system of government that is made for that exact scenario right there. It's made for tough decisions. It's made for incrementalism. We're not a speedboat. We don't get to turn around immediately. Speedboats are more often found at the local level. Cities more than counties. Counties are kind of, they're tough to work with too, because you got all these independently elected officials, which was great training ground for Congress, because nobody has to listen to you as county judge. You realize that. I mean, the judges figure that out. nobody actually.
Yeah, we do.
Nobody actually has to listen to Judge Ransom. And in order for him to lead, he's got to lead with persuasive authority, not positional authority. It's a much harder level of authority to exercise because you're trying to keep this organization moving in a direction where all these other independently elected officials can say, thanks, Judge Ransom, we appreciate your opinion, but we're actually going to go a different direction. And the sheriff, I'm sure, has never said that to you before, right?
We're good.
That's right, yeah. But you know, that's just the unique challenge of county government. City government's great because it's a little bit more focused and more accountability on the structure, and you can get a few things done more easily. Still got its challenges as well. But federal government, it's a big old barge. Just won't move overnight. We've gotten ourselves into a big pit in the last 50 years. I'm just going to tell you, we've gone down a bad pathway in a lot of different ways. Unwinding that is going to take us a while. I want to unwind it overnight, just like you do. That's why I went up there. I don't want my kids to grow up and have a country that's different than the country I grew up in. But it's going to take a while. It's going to take a while to do that, and it's going to take some hard decisions and some incrementalism to get there and turn that barge slowly. It's not the way we'd want to do it. If we could pack the House of Representatives with people from East Texas and have 435 representatives from East Texas, we're good to go. We'd get it done overnight. We would get it done overnight. We'd probably even go over and take over the Senate and just make sure that they got the right stuff done. But unfortunately, we can't do that. And we can pass a lot of stuff out of the House, and I'm going to talk about some stuff that we're working on. But once it goes to the Senate, then we're dealing with a different body. And then when we go to the executive branch, now we're really talking about it, a different perspective on life and a different perspective on the world. So let me hit a few things, and I'm going to categorize it by some committees I'm on. You guys may not know, and I'm going to tell a few stories. I want to take some questions. I'm looking at my clock. Actually, it's 12:42. I better start talking faster. I'm going to leave some time for questions. I'll talk for about 8 minutes, take 5 minutes for the questions, and I'll turn it back over to you guys. So I'm on three committees in D.C. If you guys didn't know, most freshmen only get on two committees. And when they get on those committees, then they're usually on about five subcommittees at most, four generally, five maybe. I'm on three committees and seven subcommittees. So I asked to be on three committees because you guys expect me to go there to work, and I want to go there to work. I spend about 3 weeks, 4 weeks in a month there in D.C. So this week is actually called a district week. Most other weeks, I'm up there from Monday to Thursday, late. I usually get home about midnight on Thursday night. And then Friday and Saturday, I try to spend in the district going to a different location. So last Friday, we were in Bowie County all day, which is about 2 hours and 15 minutes from my house. So got up and got there and had meetings there all day and toured businesses, talked to business owners. Have done the college tours and visited with them about things we can do from an education standpoint. But that's my routine, is typically 3 weeks there, 1 week here. This district session is actually 2 weeks, this week here and next week here. But that closed in pretty quickly on me because I'm on the Judiciary Committee, Foreign Affairs Committee, and Education Workforce Committee. And Workforce was the third committee I got on, and we'll talk about things we're dealing with each one of those. And that'll help give you an idea of the things I'm working on. But Judiciary Committee, number one is border security. And when we traveled around the community in our campaign, that was the number one thing we heard about was border security. And so when we went down there, we said, we got to get on Judiciary so we can work on border security issues. So I fought tooth and nail to get on Judiciary to do that. I told you, this week and next week is a district week. Well, next week, we're actually going to be in Yuma, Arizona area for 3 days holding border security hearings on the border. And so that's going to be a great way to try to help the rest of the United States understand what big problem we have. Now, I've been to the border several times, and I know, and I've talked about it on the trail, but we want the rest of Americans to know it is a real issue. I mean, you got the mayor of New York talking about some emergency because they've got like 20,000 illegal aliens up there. And we're like, well, you know, we got like 2 million that are coming across every year. So, you know, how about that? Let's deal with that. And so we have to secure our border. My first bill in Congress is a bill that's called the Border Security Investment Act. Because one of the problems that we're dealing with today also is spending, right? I mean, those are the two big issues, was inflation, which is really driven by government spending, and then border security. Those were the two major issues going into the session. And so we're talking about, well, we need to build a wall, we need to do more technology, we need to support our Border Patrol agents, they're our law enforcement agents, they're not the immigration side of it, they're just trying to secure the border. We gotta support them with more wages and salaries and get more of them hired and not have those levels decrease, but that takes money. Well, we don't wanna continue to spend money that we don't have to spend. Our deficit's already high, too high. So I proposed a bill that's been really well received, a lot of good co-sponsors, that says, hey, why don't we look at those transactions that we know occur all the time that are cash remittance transactions from this country back to countries of origin for illegal immigration? Because there's a lot of incentive for people to come here illegally, work under the radar, never pay cash, use our resources, drain our healthcare resources, drain whatever resources are there, earn that money in cash, never report it, send it back over to their country of origin to family members. And those countries are taking a cut of that for a lot of different reasons, but we're not doing that, and yet we're supporting all those resources. So we said, let's target those remittances, those cash remittances. We're not targeting bank-to-bank wire transfers, people that have bank accounts, they've shown ID, they've gone through all that stuff. We don't want to mess with that. But what we're doing is saying, let's capture all that other stuff. Or even people that are here illegally that are working just in cash and never paying that amount into the system, doing the same thing, draining the resources and sending it back to the top five countries of origin for illegal immigration. We've estimated we can capture $16 billion a year by doing that. That's a conservative estimate. Those are based on some 2017 numbers we're looking at, 17 and 18 numbers. $16 billion is roughly equivalent to the entire budget of the CBP right now. Of the border protection side of things. So we could spend that money specifically on border security. And it sets up trust funds. It says half that money goes into a trust fund to reimburse states for their border security measures. Half of it goes to allowing the feds to do it directly as well. We know that Texas has spent about $2.5 billion in the past couple of years. So it would reimburse them for that. It's not on the backs of our taxpayers. It's not money we don't have. It would be generated really from targeted transaction fees for people that are here illegally that are not already contributing to the system and contributing to the problem. So that's what we want to do. And then we actually say, hey, let's set a cap on that. And once we get to $50 billion between those two, then let's let it waterfall down and pay off the national debt. Anything above that goes to pay off the national debt. When we talk to people about that, they're like, wow, that's a really creative, well-designed, narrowly tailored piece of legislation. I want to get on board with that. And that's what we want to sell ourselves as there, is to say, look, we understand the problem, and we don't want to overregulate people. We want to have targeted solutions for targeted problems, and the number one thing is border security. So that's where we started. That was the first bill that I dropped, and you should know I'm going to keep pushing on that this year. I think it'll be an important bill today. So that's the judicial. We had a judiciary committee, education. We'll hit on the education committee for a second. We had our first committee meetings last week, and we did the state of education just to kind of set the groundwork for some things we're going to do. One of the things we're going to do is pass a Parents' Bill of Rights to say parents have to have a decision, have to be at the table in decision making. Many of you know that that's really big for me. I'm a huge supporter of education. Started an education foundation, been involved in education while I was trying to get my degrees at Lubbock, and my wife was a public school teacher. But parents cannot be excluded from that decision. In fact, I quoted from a 1925 U.S. Supreme Court case last week called Pierce versus Society of Sisters. It's a case I learned in law school. And when I was preparing for this hearing, I thought, people need to hear these quotes. And so I flipped a few quotes and said, by a 9-0 unanimous decision by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1925, looking at an Oregon law that was trying to force all elementary school kids to go to only public school and not have choice to go to any other school, not homeschool, not private, not parochial, not charter, nothing. They only had to go to public school until they were out of elementary school. The Supreme Court, by 9-0, said, it is a fundamental right of parents to direct the upbringing of their children, and that's the religion and the education of their children. Parents can't be excluded from that. they can't be excluded from that. And in fact, they said things like, it's not seriously debatable that. I mean, that's what they said almost 100 years ago. Well, seems like today we've forgotten that. I mean, all of a sudden we want to turn that on the head. We want to exclude parents from the decision making. I'm in favor of all kinds of schooling. Now, let me just tell you, I'm in favor of all kinds of schooling, but every child is different. Every parent needs to find the right path for their student. We need to have a very strong public school system, but we also need to have parents involved. Here in East Texas, we actually do that. I think we do that really well. How? On the school board. The school board is made up of parents. And I love that. I love that a lot because here in East Texas, we don't exclude parents from that. But other parts of the country, they're going crazy. They're keeping parents out of all the decision making. They're telling them, no, you don't have a say in your kids' education. They're trying to do things on the transgender agenda that excludes parents to even know about it. And you think, are we mad? Have we lost our minds to allow that to happen to kids that whose brains haven't even developed, and now you're allowing that to happen without parents' involvement or parent approval of that? Well, frankly, I think to do that to a child is child abuse. And we're allowing that to happen through school districts. It's not here in East Texas, but what happens somewhere else is gonna find its way and creep its way to East Texas eventually. We need to put a stop to it. The other funny thing about, I know I'm going over by my time, but I'll give you some questions here in a second. The other interesting thing about education is it's not in the Constitution for the federal government to do. It should be a state's issue. And whether or not whether or not you want to go to public school or private school or homeschool or whatever it is, whether or not you're Democrat or Republican, it doesn't matter. I think everybody should support local school decision making at the state level, not the federal level. Why? Because the feds always screw it up. We've never gotten anything right. We can't do anything right in Washington, D.C. So my whole goal in Washington, D.C. is to return decision making to the locals. I was on the city council. I was on the county level. I've been a part of educational institutions, not on the school board. It was too hard a job for me. School board's tough. tough. But, you know, for us to stand in Washington, D.C. and try to tell somebody on a local level what's best for their school district, the folks in California don't want a conservative evangelical Christian telling them what to do with their education. By the same manner, I don't want some liberal socialist from California telling us what to do in East Texas on education. That's what happens when we get it at the federal level. So I told the education committee, listen, if you let me on here, just know my whole goal is what I'm saying is the orderly liquidation of the Department of Education. Not to rip out, yes. and it's not to rip out funding, it's to return all that down to the state level and allow the states to decide what's best for them on a state-to-state basis. Because that's where accountability and transparency happens, is on the local level. You're not gonna get that at the federal level. You're gonna get this junk like we see out of the BLM stuff and the woke policies that are going on, and it's happening, and it's finding its way down to our big cities in Texas, and it's gonna find our way to East Texas. Luckily, we've got great school boards here, we got great parental involvement here, we know how to do education, we just need the federal government to stay out. So I'm gonna figure out how to do that over time. That's one of those big bars things. It's gonna take time to do. You gotta unwind something that's been wound up for years, for decades. And I want to do it in a way that's not harmful to our local school districts, because we have some great local school districts and we need to continue to support them and make sure that they're doing powerful things for our kiddos. But that happens here locally. So I'm also on Foreign Affairs Committee. Great thing is, nothing in the news about foreign affairs, right? So it's been a quiet committee. I thought about, just for a moment, wearing a little balloon to the State of the Union address. But my wife told me, no. It's not the place to do that. She was right, it's not the place to do that. But the sovereignty of our southern border is dissolved because of the Biden administration policies. The sovereignty of our air has been dissolved because of the way they've reacted to some things. I know they shut down a couple things this last week. But I don't think that would have happened if we hadn't made such a big stink about the first one that went through. And we just allowed it to float over our entire country. And we had been tracking it since the very beginning. And we could have shot it down over the ocean before it got to anything sensitive. It went over 3 highly sensitive military sites. Yep. We just let it happen. And So we've got some work to do there. On foreign affairs, I'm also on the oversight and accountability subcommittee, which means we're gonna be looking at Afghanistan withdrawal. And I'm gonna be glad to be part of that. I'm on the European subcommittee there, which means we're gonna be involved in a lot of the European conflict right now, and that's unfortunate. There's just no easy answers there at all. So those are some of the things I'm working on right now. I want you to know that my day, and I'll stop and take some questions, my day there is not a pomp and circumstance day. It's not a day of lots of free time. I get pulled from committee meeting to committee meeting. Most of the time they're going on at the same time. And then on the House floor to vote on things. And I'm reading the bills, by the way, you should know. I'm reading the bills before I vote on them. I know it's something the Democrats don't do. But we're, we've opened up the House of Representatives. I gave my first tour to a school that came up last week, and it was great to talk about the history of what went on there in the halls of Congress, because we can make a difference there. But I've got to continually be connected to you guys, because I'm an East Texan at heart. I grew up in East Texas. I grew up in a little bitty mobile home till the age of 10, and then moved into the large city of White House, Texas. And my mom still lives in the house I grew up in there on Lexington Street. And I don't forget those roots. We grew up barely able to rub two nickels together and had to learn to work hard for everything we had, but we learned to serve along the way too. And that's why I love talking to groups like you guys, because you guys know service is just ingrained in you. And it is in me too. So you're gonna get a straight line evangelical Christian conservative in Congress with me. That's what you always know, and that's what you're gonna get. I'm never gonna be able to deliver 100% of turning that little speedboat around every time, but incrementally we're gonna turn this country around if we just stay steady, stay strong, stay strategic. Those are the words I've been using for our foreign policy. They've been non-existent, we need to do that. In just about every area. But I've learned if we do that personally, we'll be good. 12:57, I'm sorry, I took up a lot of time. Is there a couple of questions I can take real quick? Just a couple of questions. I have so much to tell you. But anyway, about my work day, by the way, it doesn't end till like 11 o'clock at night. I don't think I've ended a work day till 11. Some days it's into a 1 in the morning, 1:30 in the morning, and it starts at 6 in the morning. I sleep on my couch. So I got a 5-foot commute from my desk to my couch. I get up in the morning, I go downstairs, into the tunnel, over to the next building, take a shower in the little gym area, come back, get ready for the day, get going. And I stay blowing and going until at least 11. But sometimes when I come back at that point, I see these notebooks for the next day's hearings, and I got to look at all that stuff and prepare for the next day hearings before that minute-by-minute schedule gets going the next day. And so I want you to know you're getting your money's worth out of me. I'm working as hard as I can. It's the way my dad raised me. He got up at 3 every morning to do a vending route. And so I don't know any different. It's just to work. Judge.
I think most of us know Robin Bass, who is your district staff, but I wanted to mention that Robin is here, of course, district staff, and you also have other staff. I just want to introduce your staff and tell us how you got to be, you had a district office up and running before anybody else.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. And it was up in Texarkana, it's thanks to Robin. Robin, you guys know her from many, many years of public service. I think the first time I met Robin, it took me like 2 minutes, maybe a minute and a half, to figure out I needed to hire her. And so I just had to keep it quiet for several months. But I wanted to hire her immediately because she knows the area, she knows the people. She's ingrained in these northern counties that we inherited when redistricting happened. So we put her over, kind of letting her run loose over these 8 or 9 counties in the north part of our district to say, we just need you involved in the community, which she's already done. And she got that district office up and going within, we were up like the second week. And no other freshman congressman was up and running that quick. Jalen Lewis is a pastor in Tyler at Tyler Metro Church, has been for years. He's been with me for the last year. His daddy was my youth pastor. His granddaddy was my pastor growing up. And so I've known him for a long time. And he's my senior advisor. He travels with me everywhere. Great wisdom and counsel I get from him, just talking through what is the eternal perspective on all these issues? I mean, honestly, that's what it is. What's the Christian worldview about what we're doing here? And keeping me grounded so that DCE doesn't creep in. Thank you guys for your time today. Really appreciate it.